Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
From Heavy Worries, the senior NFL reporter, Matt Lombardo. Matt, welcome back.
Steve, always great to chat with you, my man. How are you?
I'm doing really well. Thanks so much. So let's get to the column that you put out today because it was really intriguing. The five best off-season moves. So, and it seems like a lot of them were west of the Mississippi. What did you? What were your takes out of the five best off-season moves?
Yeah, Steve. You look at the AFC West. It's really like one of those great Western running gun shootout movies from the 1960s, right? You think about all of the talent out there, and you look at what the Los Angeles Chargers did, bringing in J.C. Jackson, arguably a top three corner in the league. Right. They bring in Khalil Mack and pair him opposite of Joey Bosa. So you really improve both levels of the defense. And you have Justin Herbert there. And the Raiders, who went to the wild card round a year ago, they make a trade for who many of my sources and many executives around the league believe that he is the best receiver in the NFL, Davante Adams. They get better. And you look at the Denver Broncos, who were knocking on the doorstep in the second half last year of a playoff berth. They trade for Russell Wilson, so they have a quarterback. That's going to be one of those divisions where it's must-see TV every week. They're on prime time almost every weekend, and for good reason. And I think that all four of those teams did what they needed to do. And I think if there was ever a gap between the Chiefs and everybody else, I think it's closed.
Is this the best quarterback division in the NFL?
Oh, I think by far, right? I mean, we can look at the AFC North where Joe Burrow resides, and I think that Burrow is arguably the best young quarterback in the NFL. But I don't know that there's a division in football that can compete with Patrick Mahomes and Justin Herbert and Derek Carr and now Russell Wilson. You look at all of those quarterbacks, they all have tasted some semblance of postseason success outside of Justin Herbert, who's knocked on the doorstep. He might have the best roster around him at this point. Patrick Mahomes has the most experience, and the weapons that Derek Carr now has, well, they might have what it takes to not only win that division but make a run if they get in.
All right, so Kenny Pickett, I drew the analogy earlier in the show where I said Kenny Pickett to me is like Drew Aller and Bo Perbula at Penn State. They're two really talented freshman quarterbacks. But there's an established veteran here in Sean Clifford. Well, you know, after the spring, there's no doubt who the leader of the pack is and who's number two. It's Christian Veiu. But the fans want to see the kids. So what about Kenny Pickett? Because in Pittsburgh, he's the, quote, kid they want to see.
Yeah, count me in the camp, Steve, that says let Drew Aller develop, and hopefully next year to begin a national championship run up there in Happy Valley. I couldn't be more bullish on that kid and on that program.
Right.
But, you know, as far as Kenny Pickett goes, look, Mitchell Trubisky, I think, is a stopgap at best. I think he's a bridge quarterback at best. And I really like the parallel you drew to the Nittany Lions there, because I don't know that – I think Sean Clifford has more pedigree at this point than someone like Mitchell Trubisky does. And if Kenny Pickett comes in – and obviously it's a big leap from winning the ACC in a down year for Clemson – to going in and dissecting and tearing up NFL defenses. Everyone that I talk to is a firm believer that Kenny Pickett has what it takes above the shoulders, that he's has great pre-snap acumen, that he can read defenses, he can make quick decisions, he makes the right throws, but it's the arm strength and the footwork that they don't know that it's quite up to NFL par. So I think that this is going to be, along with what's going on in Carolina, I really think this, the position battle for the starting job in Pittsburgh is as wide open as it gets. Yeah. I think it's going to be one of the most watched position battles in all of training camp around the league.
Which then brings us to Mike Tomlin. Nobody has the longevity in the league as a head coach that he does. Yet this is the first time he's ever had to do this.
Yeah, and I think that you look at the Steelers and kind of the trajectory the franchise has been on ever since they were run out of their building by the Browns in the wild card round 2 years ago. The defense really taking a step back last year. If you're Mike Tomlin, I don't know that you're necessarily feeling the pressure, but if it's close, if you get to August 30th and you're looking at Mitchell Trubisky and he might be a hair ahead of Kenny Pickett, I don't know that I would resist the temptation to playing the kid, because you kind of restart the clock on your tenure by playing the rookie quarterback, letting him go through his growing pains. And with that supporting cast around him, with the Deontay Johnson, Chase Claypools, Pat Freiermuth, and Najee Harris's of the world, you know, he has the supporting cast around him to be fairly productive. It just comes down to, again, how quickly does the game slow down for him? Whereas you know what you have in Mitchell Trubisky, you know what his ceiling is. I don't know that we know what the ceiling is for a kid like Kenny Pickett. Now, I'm Mike Tomlin. I'd probably be resting my tenure on the unknown versus the stopgap veteran.
All right. You know, when you look at Trubisky, though, he will be the one that that'll bring at least some experience to the table. And I think maybe sitting out last year, and it, you know, I know he was a backup, but you know, essentially he sat out and he watched last year with Josh Allen on the field, and I'm not so sure that didn't hurt him. So he gave him a perspective on the game.
Oh, I agree, and I think that, you know, sitting there and watching Josh Allen in the same quarterback room as Brian Daboll, who's now the head coach of the New York Giants, you know, absorbing everything, the preparation that Allen goes through, being in that system, in that team, getting the reps without the pressure of being the starting quarterback every week, I think it's going to help him. I just don't know that Pittsburgh is the place for him. And, you know, obviously it's a great spot if you're just looking to, in his case, I don't want to say cash a check, but hold the seat warm for the next quarterback. But, you know, playing in a dome, playing in a warm weather climate, given his skill set, given some of his drawbacks in terms of being turnover prone throughout the course of his career and those sort of things, I think playing in a warm weather climate or a dome might have given him more longevity for a starting job than he might have in Pittsburgh with Kenny Pickett breathing down his neck.
How do you view Sam Darnold and Baker Mayfield in Carolina?
Yeah, I have a real hard time, Steve, believing, even though they gave up next to nothing to get him, only a conditional fifth-round pick, I have a hard time believing the Panthers don't start Baker Mayfield. You know, I spoke to an NFC quarterbacks coach who told me at the moment the trade went down that the Panthers didn't have a competent quarterback on their roster. Now they have one in Baker Mayfield. I think Mayfield offers more upside than Sam Darnold, and I think that if they were comfortable and confident in Darnold this year and moving forward, I don't think that they would have made that trade. And I think that they're already the big winners of that trade, because you look at Cleveland picking up something like $20 million of Mayfield's salary. You look at the fact that they gave up so little draft capital to bring him in. They have so little invested in the quarterback position that at least for this year, there's all kinds of upside. And it just comes down to whether or not Baker Mayfield can be the guy and take that leap and become the franchise quarterback that everybody believed that he had the chance to be when he was chosen number one overall.
All right, Sue Robinson in the end is going to be the one that's going to recommend what the NFL should do. What do you think, you know, what, you know, in your mind, just on what you know and what you've read and your sources, how long could Deshaun Watson get? Because I'm sure there's, you know, no matter what the grand jury said about Deshaun Watson, there's going to be pressure on the league to at least show they did something. So what do you think they might do?
For sure. And I think that if you're in the Cleveland Browns front office, I think that you have to be preparing yourself for a possible 6 or even 8 game suspension. And I think that's why you've heard some whispers around the league about Jimmy Garoppolo potentially being in play there. I think that they need to keep their options open to find some sort of veteran backup as an insurance policy if they're without Deshaun Watson for 6 games or half a season, because I think that's very possible based on the heinous nature of these allegations, based on the fact that, you know, the NFL has to take into consideration that the Houston Texans settled with so many of these women. They settled so many of these cases, regardless of what the grand jury says, as you pointed out, Steve. I think the NFL has to send a message here that sort of behavior can't be tolerated. And I think it could be a pretty hefty suspension coming down the pike.
Yeah, which then puts a lot of pressure on Jacoby Brissett and a lot of pressure on the Browns. They made this deal. Now, they also crafted the deal in such a way where the financial hit would be minimal for Watson, at least in terms of NFL terms.
Right. Very, very significant for the Browns, though, in terms of their commitment.
Yes.
And their hit, with the fully guaranteed contract, which just still is a decision with everything that's going on off the field. It's just astonishing to me that the Browns made that kind of commitment, but it goes to show you how desperate they were to land an elite franchise quarterback, regardless of what was going on with him off the field.
It's an exciting time, Matt, that the NFL is back and training camps are starting. And that goes with the column that you wrote today as the senior NFL reporter for Heavy. What are a couple of other storylines that you want to see how they play out in the first 2 to 3 weeks?
I'm fascinated with what's going on in Baltimore and the fact that Lamar Jackson still doesn't have a contract extension. That's certainly going to be something that I'm keeping an eye on. In Philadelphia, one of the stops on my to-be-announced training camp tour. I'm interested in seeing whether or not Jalen Hurts takes a big step forward, because the Eagles are another team that they kind of control the quarterback board next year, right? They have two first-round picks that if Hurts makes a leap with A.J. Brown and Miles Sanders and all the weapons around him, they might not need a quarterback and they can build around him. But if Hurts falters, they can kind of control the veteran quarterback market themselves. Julio Jones's health in Tampa Bay is going to be something to keep an eye on. So I think there are all kinds of storylines around the NFL, and I think that, as always, training camp is just such a great time of year to kind of reorient yourself with the league, with the stars, and what could be coming the upcoming season.
Matt, what do you think of Jalen Hurts as a quarterback based on the body of work so far?
I think there's definitely upside there, Steve. I think that, you know, the Eagles have and Howie Roseman have done a masterful job of building a really dominant high-end collection of skill players around him, and they have one of the best offensive lines. I think the excuses are gone now. When you drop A.J. Brown opposite Devonta Smith, when you have Dallas Goedert, when you have Miles Sanders, and you have arguably a top three offensive line in the league, I think that this is the year that Hurts needs to prove that he can throw 30 touchdowns and under 12 interceptions, that he can, you know, be a catalyst for the Eagles winning football games and making a playoff run, rather than kind of going along for the ride, which is what last year sort of felt like, especially down the stretch when the Eagles were running the ball so effectively.
Finally, I want to go to the guy I think is the NFL's greatest mystery man, because there's just not a lot of body of work on him, and that's Trey Lance. What do you think about Trey Lance?
Yeah, I think the 49ers have done the right thing, finally pulling off the Jimmy Garoppolo Band-Aid, finally ending that distraction and handing the reins over to Trey Lance. You know, from people that I talked to around the 49ers and around the league, there was a feeling that San Francisco was underwhelmed by Trey Lance last season, and then, of course, he got hurt. This is going to be pivotal for him and for them this summer, and Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch, in a lot of ways, are pinning their careers on Trey Lance being an elite franchise quarterback. He's a bit of an unknown. It sounds like he has torn it up in spring. We'll see what happens when the pads go on and the games start counting for real here in a couple of weeks.
Matt, always a pleasure. Thanks so much. Really appreciate having you on.
Of course, Steve. Happy to do it.